Are you tired of your content not getting the reach it deserves? Change that at Grow With Video Summit. From May 23rd through the 25th, join industry leaders like Gary Vee, Ollie Abdaal, Patrick Bet-David, Cody Sanchez, and more for strategies that will elevate your visibility and engagement. So go to summit.thinkmedia.com to secure your ticket. Just click the link in the description or go to summit.thinkmedia.com.
So the reason we went to shorts was not to drive our numbers through the roof. We see those as a feeder to the main show.
Dave Ramsey, personal finance expert, best-selling author.
His show, The Ramsey Show, is the second biggest radio talk show in America with over 1 billion downloads.
He also serves as the CEO for the company Ramsey Solutions.
Dave Ramsey.
Consistency is what causes success. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. Secret to happiness is low expectations, right? So if you think this is going to be easy, you're going to be disappointed.
What are the key elements to creating content that not only educates, but also actually gets people to take action?
Welcome back to the Think Media Podcast. Sean Cannell here, your guide to building a profitable YouTube channel. And I'm so fired up for this conversation with Dave Ramsey. In this episode, he actually reveals some stuff that he's never talked about anywhere else before, including his tips for communication. How do you create content that changes lives and impacts people and goes viral online? How do you build a powerful brand? And coming from the OG himself, how do you build a brand in a business that is built to last? There are so many nuggets coming up. And also today's episode is brought to you by growwithvideolive.com. Dave Ramsey is our keynote speaker at our video marketing event this year happening in Vegas. But I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. Until then, let's dive into the content with Dave.
So Dave, as a radio king and pioneer, when did you pivot and why did you start investing in video? And you didn't do TV.
Yeah, well, we did. When Fox Business first started, I did 2 years. I was one of the first shows. Oh, I was the debut shows, and I didn't make it because I sucked at it. And, we've always had video because we used to sell like VHS tapes, you know, back when the dinosaurs roamed the earth and that kind of stuff. And so we've always had video around. But my wheelhouse was talk radio. That's where the whole a lot of people's first time people found us was on talk radio for a lot of people. And so their initial contact was talk radio in back in the day. And talk radio was hot, you know, back in the 90s and even up into the 2000s. It was a big deal. Everybody was on talk radio. Everything was going on. So we're still there. I mean, we're still major in it. But we've always been format agnostic. I don't really care. And how can we get this block of information to help someone into their lives? How is the consumer consuming something? And so I avoided TikTok just because I hate it. But now we're a huge thing on TikTok because we thought, okay, we got to put something positive in there. If you hate it, you ought to do something about it instead of just standing on the sideline bitching. And so we're going to pour our stuff in there like crazy, and some of it's blown up. It's become a big hit, and especially as they've gone to more, a little bit longer format in some of their stuff. But yeah, we're just agnostic. So wherever it is, I mean, we're very seldom late to a format of any kind, whether it's audio or video or some combination thereof. And so we're always trying to do stuff. I actually did a simulcast on a cable, like a bad Saturday Night Live show skit, you know, that kind of thing, on the radio show in the early days. And a local cable channel picked it up, and we just put a fixed camera in there, and it was nasty. But we just tried it, you know, and it didn't work, of course.
Do you remember what year you started YouTube?
No. it was pretty early, and we couldn't figure out. I tell you what happened was I had gotten on Twitter. I was a little bit late to Twitter, but I loved Twitter in the early days because I could fight with people.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just trolls. Now it's just trolls and sewage. But I loved it in the early days because it was an actual interaction. It was sparring and fun. And sometimes, you know, you could just tweet back and like, I missed the part where I was taking a poll about your opinion. You know, you could have fun with people, mess with them. And a kid's name? Shay Tards. Shay.
Yeah.
Shay Carl. Shay Carl came on the show to do his debt-free scream, and I had no idea who he was.
Wow.
And he was blowing up on Twitter and on YouTube.
Yes.
Big time. So whatever year that was, that's like early 2000s.
Yeah, he was an early, one of the biggest vlog.
And so Shay, you know, what happened was we mentioned him, and then my Twitter, I get like 10,000 subscribers in 40 minutes or something. I'm like, who is this guy? What is this guy? And then I called him, and he's like, yeah, I'm making like $1 million a year. YouTube's paying me because we've got such viewers. And I'm like, you get paid by YouTube?
Yeah.
I got a YouTuber making $1 million. I'm in. Let's figure out how to do this. And so we signed up and we put a camera out and we started doing the whole radio show, all 3 hours, which is 38 minutes of content and mostly commercials.
Yeah.
On YouTube. And at the commercial breaks, we would have George Camel, who's now a personality. He would do interviews with, we have the public sitting outside the, we're on the glass with us with the studio. So the public's sitting out there. We do interviews with them. We do some VOs. You know, we drop in some video stuff just to fill up all that commercial time. And then later on, we figured out how to build an algorithm to strip all that stuff out and just put it more pure to YouTube where it's almost no commercials, which is the only way it works, obviously. The other thing was it didn't do very well because it was all commercials.
Mm. So in your experience, because now today, I looked it up in the last like 30 days, you're approaching 100 million views in a month just between the Clips channel, the main show, but then all the personalities have shows, so I didn't go that deep to add it all up. But the impact on YouTube is amazing. In your experience, what are the key elements to creating content that not only educates, but also actually gets people to take action?
Well, you know, it's the same in every format, and YouTube's really not different, except that you have to think about what the user experience is for the YouTube viewer.
Yeah.
And so you have to build a thing in such a way that does that. So the reason we went to Shorts was not to drive our numbers through the roof, although it's done that wonderfully. Mm. We see those as a feeder to the main show. So they're a lead magnet as far as we're concerned. The Shorts are give you a sampler platter, you're at Sam's, the old ladies give you a biscuit, right? And so we want you to take a bite of the biscuit and, oh, I want more. You come in and watch the long form show. Because I can't really, in the world that we are, the world of transformation, life transformation, I can't really do that in a minute and a half.
Mm.
And a short doesn't work if it's much more than a minute and a half. And so, that's what my guys tell me. You know more about that than I do. But they want, you know, they just edit the crap out of whatever we do and turn it into a short is what mouse do. They sawdust it. And so our goal is to the same thing we did in talk radio. In the old days in talk radio, we would say, okay, if you did a really good job going into the break and you hold a caller through a commercial break, you want to visualize a 34-year-old mom just coming home from the grocery store, her ice cream is in the bags in the back seat, and she's sitting in her driveway with the car running and the ice cream melting because she has to know the other side of the break what happens with that woman that's on the phone with Dave. It's compelling. And so what is that? Well, it's storytelling, it's humor, it's visceral, it's very real. It's the same reason back in the 50s and 60s there was a column even up into the 70s called Dear Abby. People would write into the newspaper and ask Abby's opinion about a relationship thing. And so there's this voyeuristic thing. I'm looking in on someone else's life thinking, well, I'm not that dumb. That person's really dumb. But I want to know how it turns out. And so because I'll learn something in the process. So we can deliver the principles through story, humor, visceral interactions, emotional interactions, because they stick. And then they help me change my life, myself. I can go home and talk to my wife. My wife can come home and talk to me and go, you know, I heard this thing. And, you know, we really ought to do that. We ought to look at that. We ought to think about living a better life and transform. So that's our goal, is to get them there. So everything we do swirls around that. It starts at the top of a funnel with, all kinds of lead magnets, apps, everything else, certainly the Shorts, those kinds of things. And even that's how we use social media. It's just to drive down into the main show. Because in the long form, we can give you the information and the inspiration that a certain percentage of people listening or watching will actually act on.
Yeah, and you've transformed so many lives, and you have these distinctions, like it's visceral, it's storytelling, there's a hook that keeps people going. Did you just learn that from repetition, or have you also been actively studying maybe early on? What has been your transformation into understanding those distinctions? A lot of reps or also intentional study?
Both. The reps, I mean, when you do something wrong, they yell at you, so you hear about it. And if enough of them abandon you, then you're way off track. But I came out of the financial world, and we figured out the distinction, the brand differentiator for Ramsey is that we figured out personal finance is 80% behavior. Mm. It's only 20% head knowledge. And so that means that the vast majority of the financial world is telling you what to do. So your mother's 401k meeting will give you a migraine and make you want to commit suicide. I mean, it's awful. It's boring as crud, and yet you know you need it, right? But so why be boring? Money's fun if you got some, mm-hmm. you know. And so we would do these liners and talk radio, like, you know, we're the show that gives you the same financial advice your grandmother would, only we keep our teeth in. And, you know, we do all these kinds of things and just have fun with it and laugh about it and cut up and sometimes just get up in people's face for their benefit. We never have attacked people virtually never, just for the entertainment value. We're not shock jocks. That's not what we do. We're trying to help people. But some of the stuff people do is just shocking.
Yeah. What year did you start creating content? And I'm talking tapes, or what were the formats?
We started the radio show in 92 on a, oddly enough, a bankrupt radio station who paid us nothing because that's what they could afford. We were doing it for fun.
Wow.
And it was really bad. It was nasty. I mean, because I've got a Southern accent now, but it was like country fried, like WWTN, we're talking Nashville. You know, it was like hee-haw.
Yeah.
It was fun. You don't even know what hee-haw is, but it was country. Anyway, so we just started that, and I had just self-published my first book, and I was carrying around the trunk of my car.
What was the title?
Financial Peace.
Okay.
And later we sold it to a publisher, and it became our first number one New York Times bestseller. It's done about 3.5 million copies now, but it started in 92. And I didn't open an office until 94. I was doing it out of my living room on a card table. And I was doing financial counseling, a few speaking gigs, and I would take some of the speaking gigs, or I would just get in front of a microphone on the off time on radio and do a 30-minute talk and put it on a cassette tape, and we were selling the cassette tapes. Later on, I scraped together a few $1,000s, and we did this video shoot of this seminar with 8 people in the audience trying to make it look like it was a bunch of people, and it was really lame, and I sold a bunch of them. The content was good, but the delivery, it's horrible. As you guys know, people that do this, you watch yourself back.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Even today, I watch myself. I'll watch this back, and I'll go, oh, man. But so tape is a brutal coach.
Yeah.
And just think, man, 35 years of tape. That's lashes on my back watching that stuff. It's just horrible. And I've gotten better, but I still see stuff. I'm like, oh, don't do that. But, you know, do better. Do better every time.
Today you have all this momentum. We're here. There's like Building B. There's your own event center, this whole property. Our Uber driver over was talking about a shopping mall though before, and not a lot of natural light and all kinds of different stages in the journey. Ultimately, what was the hustle at the start? Like now you have all this momentum in the business is going, but 1992 or those early years, what kind of work did it take to get kind of lift off of in the early days? What was your work day like?
That was the hardest ever. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. I'd wish the result on everybody, but the hard, my kids were little. My wife said she was a single mom. Mm. And because I was, you know, when we opened the office in 94, that was when it was the worst because I was teaching. We have a class called Financial Peace University that's been taught now. About 10 million people have been through it in about 50,000 churches. And I was teaching it live in a Holiday Inn ballroom across the street from the office. And they wanted us, in order to give us a deal, we started teaching it on Monday nights. And then it grew on Tuesday night, and then Thursday night, and then Wednesday night, and then Friday night, and then two on Saturday. So we were doing 7 of those a week, 2 on Saturday with a matinee. And live with an overhead projector, right, and a bad suit and a little microphone tied to a boombox, and it was like 300 people in there, and it was a 26 week class to go through. It was crazy.
Wow,
560 bucks, a long time. And we filled all of that up. But the stupid Holiday Inn wanted us to tear down the room every day because they might want, every night, because they wanted to have the JC's or the Kiwanis Club in there during the day for their lunch or whatever. So they gave me a good deal, but we did all the labor. And so I'd come in at 8 o'clock in the morning. I would do the show. The show is from 1 to 4 central time. And I would drive 45 minutes to Opryland Hotel, which was where the studios were of the radio station. I would do a 3-hour show, get off at 4 o'clock, come back, go over, set the holiday room up, Holiday Inn room up, snapping the thing around the, putting the screen up, the whole thing, setting up the chairs, come back over, take a shower, go over, teach the class from 6 to 7, do a small group discussion from 7 to 9, and end up staying and helping some poor single mom that was scared to death, end up 11 o'clock at night, go home, get up next morning, rinse and repeat, Groundhog Day. And so that went on for about, I guess, almost 2 years.
Wow.
And speaking occasionally, I would, you know, be heading out of town somewhere doing media. We launched the book. I did a 26 city book tour in the middle of all that. That was crazy with, nobody does that now.
Yeah.
With Financial Peace, the book. But back then there were morning shows. There was everything in the world. So anyway, it was crazy for probably 3 years. And then we put that class on video and it changed everything. It scaled immediately because we were full. We were a logistical bottleneck. We couldn't get anybody else in the class when it was all analog right there. And so we put it on VHS tapes, and people started taking those tapes and teaching it at their church, and it blew up. It went crazy, and it gave me that whole, gave me my nights back, and I got to go home at 5:30 or 6 o'clock or whatever, and I could get more done. So it turned everything way down. And then as we started making a little bit of money finally, instead of just like nickels and dimes, we could hire good people. And you get good people, you don't have to do all the dadgum work. I mean, the delegation was an amazing concept.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we started adding, and we finally got to about 40 people on the team and started adding our first two layers of leadership and learning about leadership in the middle of all that. That's probably when it kind of, I got a breath. And that probably took 36 to 48 months or something like that. And a whole bunch of dumb butt stuff that didn't work that I thought was going to work. I've always done dumb butt stuff that didn't work, but we did a lot of it in those days.
Do you feel like with a lot of the social media promises that are out there make it seem like you can just blow up overnight and maybe you go viral, but I don't know if the characters developed in that process. Do you think in this modern era, maybe these modern generations, that what it really takes is underestimated, the hustle in those early days?
You know, I don't wish that on anybody. Like I said, my personal experience is that when I have something that blows up, it's pretty temporary.
Mm.
It doesn't last. I mean, you know, 3 weeks later, nobody remembers it. You know, we were on Oprah. We thought back in the day when Oprah was a big deal, I thought if I could ever get on Oprah, and I'd almost been on Oprah more than anybody. And I'd been on all the other shows that were on back then, all the big daytime TV things. You know, there was everybody and their brother had a show. And I thought if we could just get on Oprah, then it'll all be easy, you know, and that'll be it. And yeah. I can just coast. Now, we were on Oprah and it was like we sold, I don't know, 500,000 books or something. It was nice, but it didn't, like 4 weeks later, we still had to make payroll. 4 weeks later, you know, we had a new young married couple that were fighting about their car payment, and they didn't care if I was on Oprah. They just needed help. And so I kept waiting on someone to discover me and make it easy. I'm still waiting. Yeah. Still waiting. It ain't easy.
That's amazing. So it's always come back to then, would you say, better than those seasons of sacrifice? You have a quote, live today like no one else. What's the quote?
Yeah, live like no one else so that later you can live and give like no one else.
So sometimes there's a season of sacrifice, but would you encourage more than how intense those 2 years are that there's something about being slow and steady and balanced? What's your thought? There's this big debate between hustle culture and balance, but if you're speaking to leaders and entrepreneurs, how do you wrestle that tension of season of sacrifice versus, yeah, you know, the hustle?
Well, the hustle needs to subside. If it is like my early days there, that's not sustainable. I wouldn't be married. My kids would all be in drug rehab or whatever, you know, all that. I mean, I would have lost everything if I had stayed with that schedule. But for a period of time, my wife grew up on a farm, so she believed in hard work. So she's, go do it for a period of time. But we're not going to do this forever. Okay, so we're going to give it a defined thing. So the idea, this concept of balance, I speak to entrepreneurs and leaders all the time. This concept of balance is mythology. You don't want to be out of balance in one area of your life over an extended amount of time. But, you know, when you go out on a date with your wife and you're sitting looking across, you better not looking across. You better not be in balance. You better be 100%. When you're coaching your kids' ball team, you shouldn't be balanced. You ought to be 100% coaching dad and mom, right? And you know, be where you is, you know, 100%. That's not balance. And so don't be balanced. My son just finished does these triathlon things, and, you know, he's not balanced. He's up in the freaking 4 o'clock in the morning running way too many miles, all this stuff, right? But when he finishes that, you know, he's there. And if the baby's sick, he's home. He doesn't do his run. So because you need to be 100% dad when you're 100% dad. But, where people get out of balance, what they do is, number one, they don't want to work hard and they blame it on balance or nurturing their family. Or they've got this vision that they're going to do this for the rest of their lives. That's not sustainable. I'm not recommending that. But I am recommending in short bursts, maximum 36 months or something, get it.
Yeah.
You know, in short bursts. And whatever it is you're doing, whether it's family, whether it's your spiritual walk, whether it's getting ready for a triathlon, you know, get it. Do it. You know, you can't half-ass do stuff and expect it to turn out. It doesn't turn out. You got to get it.
Yeah.
And so that's you don't want to be balanced in any given moment. But over the scope of time, when you look across the pockets of time spent with wife, time spent with kid, time spent – In my Bible, time spent working out. Yeah, there's a balance over time. But this idea that we can, you know, I can work 4 hours a day and you're not going to succeed.
Strong. So you're known for creating all these powerful books, all this powerful content. And if you gave us the privilege on this podcast and everybody listening to this to sit at the table where you're maybe coaching your personalities and you're talking about maybe giving some feedback, some locker room talk. What do you teach your Ramsey personalities when it comes to communication?
You better be funny often. You better be a storyteller. The best communicators in the world can tell a story. Hmm. And video is a great format for storytelling. You can create story arc like nobody's business. That's one and two. Number three is you're not the hero. Donald Miller talks about this in his book, he's a genius at unpacking this. But, you know, make the customer the hero of their story. You show them how to be the hero. If you're the hero, the first time you burp, they're gone. Mm. First time it's difficult download, the first time you roll your eyes at something political that they didn't like, you're gone. So, but if they're the hero, they'll forgive your foibles. And they'll lean in and do uncomfortable things for themselves, but they're not going to do it because they love you. That's the irony. The fourth thing is don't engage in the world that you and I are in unless you have something that you have to say. Mm. You cannot not say it, a double negative, but you cannot not say it. It has to be said. So after I went broke and lost everything, I had to show people the power financially of getting out of debt and being on a budget and having a game plan and having some savings, what that does for your marriage, what that does for your legacy, how you can build wealth. It can be done. I got the cure for freaking cancer and I survived cancer. I cannot not say it. There has to be that thing. But if you just think I'm going to be, I'm the next dancing poodle on YouTube, you're a failure before you started. You know, write a book about you. I don't want a book about you. I want a book about me and you showing me how to be a better me. And if that's a comedian and it's just funny and I'm getting a good belly laugh, I got great friends that are comedians. They're some of the smartest people on the planet. But that's okay. Entertainment is fine. I'm not against entertainment. That's my point. But at least understand that even when you're entertaining, you're not the hero. Make the audience member the hero. When you're writing, when you're blogging, when you're, cutting a quick thing for freaking Instagram, or whatever. Why is it you're doing this? If, you know, the reason people have influence, and we call them influencers, is because they somehow are making the other person the hero. And Donald Miller is exactly, he's got that dialed in. So make them the hero, be funny, tell stories, have a passion about what it is, the piece of content you're putting out, that it really matters to you. You go back to Shea Carl way back in the day. I mean, he has a passion for family and family values, and he did then. And it was really an unusual back then YouTube show. I don't know how unusual it would be today, but back then it was like all that we were, you know, it was cats chasing lasers, right? And he's doing this whole thing on his family, and they call it Shaytards, and you know, because they wore leotards, not because of other things. And but it inspired people to have a good family, to have a good marriage, and to raise fun kids. And they did funny, goofy things as a family. And it's like, wow, it was like a modern version of Leave It to Beaver. But it's he couldn't stay away from it, and it was the secret sauce for his success.
So those are some technical communication things you'd look for in the personalities. What about character traits? What kind of character traits do you look for? And this, of course, is transferable to the listener. Or maybe what would keep somebody from being a Ramsey personality? That might be a red flag.
Mm. Well, I mean, we're playing long ball. So we're not trying to get one. We don't need one hit wonders. They're of no value, again, because once you're on Oprah, nobody cares for you 4 weeks later. Once you've done the Today Show, nobody cares 28 minutes later. Mm. They really don't. I mean, we do a Fox and Friends, like I do it, I don't know, several times a month. One of us does around here. And we get a spike for 20 minutes, and it's over. And if we don't do it for 2 months, we don't get that spike, but we don't fail, but we don't succeed because we did that. So it's death by a thousand cuts. Keep chopping wood. Keep chopping, keep cutting, keep cutting, keep cutting, keep cutting, keep cutting, and just show up every day. And the consistency is what causes success. Never, ever, ever turn down a media hit in the early days. Take everything, even the silliest, weirdest thing in the world. Take it, take it, take it, take it, take it. I've done stuff on community access, and the guy with the Humane Society is in the audience. He's the next guest, and while we're talking, the dog is pooping in the floor that he's going to bring on to sell the puppy, right? I mean, I've done all this stuff, right? So everything, take everything, consistency, do it, 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 do it. Then the second thing is I don't care how cool you are, how big you get, there's no blue M&Ms in the green room. So don't go in there looking for everybody. You know, if you need a rider to show up on how, you know, your demands, screw that. You got confused about what this is about. This is not about you. You've been blessed, if you're a Ramsey personality, with an incredible platform to help people with, and your job is not you. Your job is help people. You'll get all these byproducts. You'll get some money. You'll get some notoriety. You'll get, you know, you've got a great camaraderie with other people that are playing to win the Super Bowl also. And, but you, it's not about you. So there has to be this level of humility, which is a very weird thing because you have to have a big enough ego to think you got something to say.
Yeah.
And go say it. And yet on the other hand, keep in mind, it's not about you.
Hmm. Do you think money and fame changes people?
Would you like a free copy of the number one best-selling book for growing a successful YouTube channel? If you want to get a copy of the new and expanded second edition of YouTube Secrets, just go to ytsecrets.com. And if you'll cover shipping and handling, I would love to send you this book for free. And the cool thing is, when you place your order, you're also going to get access to some bonus resources like our 1,000 subscribers club, our 7 C's framework, our perfect video recipe framework, as well as some bonus videos that will help you get results on YouTube faster. So to get your copy, just go to ytsecrets.com or click the link in the podcast show notes.
Do you think money and fame changes people?
No, it exposes them. No, I'm 100% sure about that. Money doesn't ruin kids. It exposes your crummy parenting. You know, it doesn't. You know, it's the reason we have trust fund babies is because the parents didn't parent them, you know. And yet I work with families, wealthy families that are 7 generations into wealth, and the kids are not bad. They're great kids. Hmm. This idea that you automatically lose it at the 3rd generation is bull. There's some statistical evidence of that, but that's because families are dysfunctional. But the better your family, the better chances you can hand off wealth. And the same thing's true. Wealth magnifies magnifies who you are. It makes you more of what you are. If you got temper problem, you become a rageaholic egomaniac. You know, if you are compassionate and kind, you become this huge generosity movement, philanthropist, if you get money. If there's crazy in your family, it's magnified. You know, and your immediate family or your distant cousin, Eddie, will show up. And, yeah, he shows up for sure when you get money.
Eddie.
And good old Eddie. And but, I mean, he's out there, and he's in every family,
yeah.
You know. And so they'll show up 100% of the time you get money. But so it exposes the weaknesses and the strengths of character. And fame does the same thing in a little different way. And that's a little bit of what you're talking about earlier. When it comes real fast, money comes real fast, or fame comes real fast, you get, or both, it's hard to manage because you've not personally grown the skeletal structure of your character strong enough to carry that weight. And that's why we see, you know, 22-year-olds going into the NFL getting a $10 million signing bonus, and by the time they're 38 years later, they're bankrupt, they're divorced, and they're often permanently physically disabled. And not unusual, I have a criminal record, too. And so I'm going and talking to these NFL kids in these rookie camps going, hey, NFL stands for not for long. So you need to think about what this means, not Friday night. You need to think about what it means Friday night when you're 37 and you can't play anymore physically. No one, you can't run anymore because they're going to use you up, and you better think about that. And the ones that think about it, they come out of the NFL intact. And I've got several former players that are friends, MLBs and NFLs, and they. But again, they entered into it with a different idea. So it's not necessarily age or immaturity. You can be 22 and have your crap together. You know, it's possible. But you need to be wary of it at all times. So if you get a sudden rush of money, that should scare you, not have a, ooh, we hit the lotto moment.
And so is this a conversation that you've ever had to have with leaders? Have you someone on your team, maybe a conversation you've had to have with the man in the mirror, like, hey, you need to maybe stay humble, or if success is coming fast? Because one of the things, this creator economy thing, Goldman Sachs said, it's going to, the total addressable market is going to double in the next 3 years by 2027.
Wow.
To a $500 billion industry. Yahoo Finance says the fastest growing small business type are these creator type of businesses.
That's awesome.
Something like 400,000 jobs created by YouTube, not just working at Google and YouTube, but the ecosystem in the U.S. alone. But there's a lot of money and fame coming fast. And I think I've heard it said that it's one thing to try to deal with failure. It's a whole other thing to deal with success. Mm-hmm. I think this thing of humility is really interesting to me. And so I'm just wondering, the conversation about maybe staying humble, and are you trying to pick people, and not just personalities, but in your team, you're trying to identify humility, but do you not know until the light exposes what's really in somebody, or can they course correct along the way? Have you had to do that?
Well, we all course correct and grow, but that is a type of humility, to be ready to course correct. If you don't need course correction and you've already arrived, then obviously you're not humble. So C.S. Lewis said, humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. And so I can be very confident to the point that a detractor would call me arrogant, right? And they do. And yet it not be all about me.
Mm.
It can be about someone else. And it is. I don't need to work financially.
Yeah.
I work because it's fun, because I like helping people. So, I mean, that's an other-centered thing, not a self-centered thing. And yet I get all caught up in something. I get too much coffee and I'm on the air or something and I jack somebody up. And I'm like, yeah, I got to go back and apologize for that. That was a twerp. And I've been doing it 30 years and I still screwed it up, you know? So you got to do that sometimes. And then hopefully you do it less and less and less and less and less and less. You know, I can remember the moments, and we do it with leaders. So Pat Lencioni, my friend in the leadership space, has a book out called Ideal Team Player. And he says the ideal team player, and that would be true of a leader inside Ramsey or a team member, and especially true of a personality. They need to be hungry, that hustle and grind, I'm going to get it, but not to a dysfunctional level where I lose everything because of my hunger. Humble, which takes away the dysfunctional. I think of others more than self, and hungry, humble, and smart. And smart is more about people smart and relational smart than it is just pure intellect. And so when you meet someone that is only one of those three, you've got a messed up, somebody's going to make a mess. If they're only two of those three, they're not going to fit in here because we're real hardcore and we do conflict well. We'll talk to you about it instantly. Not in an embarrassing way, but we're just going to go, we don't do that here. You don't talk to people that way here. We don't act that way here. And so we're going to not destroy the brand. We're not going to destroy each other. And yet we're going to fight and scratch and claw. We have a lot of arguments here. Inside the Ramsey personality bullpen in there, man, it's like a family argument over Thanksgiving dinner. But all of our arguments, or 99% of them, are about which play to call to get the ball in the end zone, not about you're not good at this or you're awful, or it's not personal, and it's not a backstabbing thing, or it's not a gossiping thing. It's none of that. It's all about how can we win, and those are good, healthy arguments. You want to have those, and you want to have an open dialogue so that people can bring that. So anyway, yes, that you got to be hungry, humble, and smart to make it, and that's the blue M&Ms thing. That's the drive and the ego, sanctified ego, if you will, that you need. Because to turn this thing on, even if you're an introvert, and a lot of people doing stuff in their home, they don't have a bunch of people around them. They're not in front of a live audience like I often am. I'm an extrovert. I enjoy the live audience. But a lot of talk radio people, the really good ones, were introverts. I mean, I can name the ones that are on the air right now. Rush was a big-time introvert, very private, almost shy off the microphone. Hannity's not. Hannity's more like me. He's more bombastic and crazy. Glenn Beck's more like me. They're both friends, both bombastic and crazy. Glenn's particularly crazy. I call him that all the time because I love him. But some of these people, like DJs, even famous DJs spinning music on the radio back in the day, a lot of those guys are just like, they're like programmers or something, like developers. They're just like, they don't want to see people. You know, it's great.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be that you don't have to be that to win.
One of the things that you've built is this incredible brand, and it's interesting to hear back Bad Suit, Overhead Projector, tapes. I imagine in those days it didn't have the chic look, all the cool vibe.
No, it was awful. You remember clip art? Yeah, I was good at clip art.
Clip art, maybe some Comic Sans font or something.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I was good at that.
When you think about what is your thoughts on what does brand mean to you? Because now being on the property, the whole brand, the level of excellence, it's clearly been a progression. Mm. So early days.
The more money you got, the easier it is to make it look slick.
Okay, know? Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, so what does brand mean to you?
It's reputation. If you trust a brand to do something, that's its reputation. If I go to Subway 100% of the time, I can get that BMT thing, and it's 100%. I trust it. I can trust the individual sandwich brand. I can trust the yellow and green on the sign. I haven't done that in a long time. I'm not against Subway, but I'm not for Subway. I'm not endorsing them, but I'm just saying it's a trust brand. A brand is... it's predictable. Mm. Integrity should be predictable. Integrity makes you predictable. It's wholeness. And so your brand, if you come to Ramsey, you need to know, regardless if it's John Deloney in the mental health space, Ken Coleman in the career space, the rest of us in the money space, you need to know you're going to get love, humor, compassion, story, truth. I'm going to tell you the truth, even if you don't like it. You need to know that we're people of faith. We're not going to cram that down your throat, but you don't get to tell us not to do that either. On the other hand, we stand on that. That's the brand, and it's trustworthy. There was a thing going around YouTube, and I guess it's still on there, of me on a Christian TV station with a little bit of hair right here and these big Google glasses. And it's like 1992, probably, something like that. Somebody found the video and put it up on YouTube. We didn't do it. It's real Southern and real soft, and Dave's real easygoing. And it's exactly the same joke, even. I even told the same joke I still use, much less the same advice. And the riff of the advice is exactly the same. I became friends with Zig Ziglar before he passed away, and he was an icon in the motivational speaking world. And to get to meet him even was a big deal, and then to actually become friends with him. And he did the same riff at 80 years old that I heard him do at 50 years old. Mm. And it was and because it worked, but it also – and it wasn't because he wasn't smart enough to change. It's because he's smart enough to know this is truth, this is helping people, and I'm not going to change it. And he would do that same exact thing. I could see him doing his hand the same way, the whole bit. And because he was a world-class communicator, and once he found the lane, he stayed in it.
It's inspiring, and love Zig, and similar to the legacy that you've built, which in my mind, the phrase "built to last" really would speak to what you've built. You're still here after so many years. Now, you're speaking at our event in Las Vegas, Growth Video
Live. I'm excited about that. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so fired up. Do you want to learn how to start and grow a successful YouTube channel? Are you interested in learning the best strategies for getting leads and clients using YouTube, social media, and online video? If you'd say yes, then you're going to love growwithvideolive.com. Grow With Video Live is our annual event hosted in Las Vegas where entrepreneurs, influencers, content creators, small business owners, and authors and speakers gather to learn the best tips and strategies that are working on video right now. And we're excited because this year, Dave Ramsey is one of our keynote speakers, the OG content creator who over the last 30 years has dominated audio media and video media. Whether it was VHS tapes back when he launched Financial Peace University, all the way to today, where now he's getting hundreds of millions of views on YouTube and on his audio and video podcasts across the Ramsey Network. He's going to be revealing information that he's really never shared anywhere else because he's never spoke at a conference like this before. So this is an in-person event, and you can get your tickets at growwithvideolive.com. And in addition to the powerful information you'll learn from Dave and the other speakers, there's going to be powerful times of networking and connection with other purpose-driven creators, with other innovative entrepreneurs, and with other video marketing experts so that you can take your game and your relationships to another level. I know that after you attend Grow With Video Live, you will thank me later. So go to growwithvideolive.com to see all of the details and to get your ticket today to join myself, Dave Ramsey, and the Think Media team in Las Vegas, April 24th through the 26th for Grow With Video Live. This is probably one of the things that I'm most excited about is just, you know, even if I think about this power, this idea of like impartation, like this idea that sometimes there's certain things that are taught, but there's certain things that are caught. And the legacy that you've built, this theme built to last, what do you think it's been for you that you're still here? Why? I'm sure you could think about peers, other people that started on the radio, people that came and went, and you speak to entrepreneurs all the time. What are maybe the common things that cause people to get derailed, sidelined, or maybe stop short of building something great?
I'm not imparting this on myself, but I'm just saying when I see people who have had long careers versus splash in the pan, it generally has to do with character. Like, you mentioned some of these NFL guys, and I'm in Nashville, so a lot of the old country music stars are around here, and the young country music stars are around here, but I know the old ones because I'm old. So they're my friends. And the ones that like the Oak Ridge Boys, you know, have, you know, they're freaking 78 years old and they're still cranking, you know. Joe just retired this year because he's got his health problems. So their tour just ended. But, I mean, they're almost 80 years old. How do they keep doing that over and over and over and over again? And people keep wanting them and paying them. Well, A, they're consistent. B, they didn't self-sabotage with lack of character. So lack of character can run your marriage. Obviously, drugs and alcohol, people get in that stuff. The behind-the-scenes stuff will take you down. It's not the spotlight that will take you down. There's so many distractions, and it's hard to keep your focus to go forward. And so I think it wasn't like strong character. I was scared to screw up, to be one of those. Because I had friends that, you know, they had like six affairs or whatever. And the distraction of all that stuff and then the media piece that goes with it, you know, took them down. Because they did all this stupid butt stuff. Now, I've had a lot of negative media, but it wasn't because I did something like that. It's just because somebody didn't like the stuff, you know, that we opened back too soon after COVID or whatever, and trying to kill our employees, all that bull crap. So, and that's true of our personalities. If one of them gets in a situation where they're misbehaving, they can't stay because they'll destroy the rest of the brand. And because they can't finish. The second thing I think causes people not to finish is their secret to happiness is low expectations, right? So if you think this is going to be easy, you're going to be disappointed. If you think one video going viral is going to be it and then you're done, you can kick back and just click checks, you're going to be disappointed. If you think this is not going to be hard, you're going to be disappointed. If you think you're the exception to all that, you're going to be disappointed. It takes twice as long, costs twice as much, and you think you're the exception. Those are the three rules of business, right? You know, you're not. And so, this is a marathon. It's 26 freaking miles. You better start the race with that instead of going, I'm going to run a mile. And then I'm going to be successful for the rest of my life. No, you're not. No, you're not. It's and so that's this weird work ethic thing, but that's not out of balance. It's like I keep showing up. I keep showing up. I keep showing up. When it was just me doing the radio show, if I didn't show up in the old days, we had like a few tapes we could play or something. So if I'm sick, it didn't matter. You know, 400 radio stations in those days, 600 now, they don't care. They need something on the air. They don't need static. You know, it's live freaking radio. I have to be there. So, you know, you got sinus infection, we'll take some dadgum stuff and get your butt on the air and sneeze. I've lost my voice literally while I was on the air, you know, just because I wouldn't not show. I was scared to not show up because I was scared everything I built would go away in that one moment, you know. And so have a long ball mentality. I think I've said that like six times, it feels like, but there's a theme here.
Yeah. What is the biggest money myth that entrepreneurs believe?
The biggest money myth that entrepreneurs believe. Well, those of us in the that are really entrepreneurial and that know how to make money, we tend to, and I really suffered with this in the early days. I don't now, to think I could out earn my stupidity. I can just make some more. So if you're a glass half full person, if you're not a scarcity but an abundance person, I'll just go get some more. I can out-earn my stupidity. I don't have to do accounting. I don't have to manage systems and processes. I don't have to make sure that the payables are paid and the collectibles are collected. Yeah. I don't have to do business. I can just earn some more.
Yeah.
I'll just go – it's classic salesman mentality. I'll just go sell something else instead of actually managing and disciplining myself and putting operational pieces to go with the business. Because oftentimes entrepreneurs get in for the end product, not for all the work it takes to create the end product. And the more end product you start putting out, the more back end work there is. I mean, this whole building is back end work. It's 1,100 people. And, you know, eight of us are on the air. Everything else is back in, you know. So, you start doing books, podcasts, YouTube, everything. You got all this back end work. So that's the biggest thing is you cannot out-earn your stupidity. You have to do strategic thought. You have to do operational excellence. And processes and systems are part of it. That's not bureaucracy. That's not, I don't want to be corporate America. No, you don't want to be corporate America. They have no soul. But you do have to have some intelligence about some wisdom about how you go about this. And I think the second thing is that they believe, a lot of small entrepreneurs believe, well, it takes money to make money, and all businesses borrow money. No, they don't. In fact, most of them don't.
Yeah.
That's the biggest, it's statistically inaccurate. It's just not a fact. A lot of people, more than 60% of small businesses start with no debt and never borrow, which increases their probability of success because then payments don't take them down at the first blip, the first downturn in cash flow, I'm out of business. But I've never gone out of business. I mean, I got, like we said, a huge payroll here, and we lost entire segments of our revenue. It evaporated during 2020.
Wow.
And we never went in the red. We were profitable. Now, our profits went way down over projections, God help us, but oh well. And that's because all these stuff doesn't have any payments on it.
Wow. I'm curious your take. So I heard Charlie Munger say this, may he rest in peace. He said, talking about character, the thing that takes successful men down is liquor, ladies, and leverage.
Charlie! Oh, man. I love it. That's so Charlie.
But then Warren heard the quote and he said, actually, I need to correct it. It's just leverage. That's the only one. What's your take?
Warren and Charlie. Those videos of those two together are just classic. That's some of the best brain trust ever put on video. Oh, who would argue with those two men? I'm not arguing with either one of them. They're both right. But Warren's funny. That was just his take. Yeah, his is a what's the other one? Even a turkey can fly in a tornado. Yeah.
Yeah.
Warren Buffett's stuff is just but his one of his annual reports is all about leverage. He said, every time you multiply something by zero, we find out the answer is zero.
Mm.
And so when you leverage, you forget. Because entrepreneurs are perpetual optimists, and they only run the scenario that it's all going to work.
Yeah.
And debt works if it all works, but it never all works, ever. And that's Buffett's point. So ladies, liquor,
and leverage.
Leverage. That's awesome.
One of the things that has inspired our company, I mean, I feel like we're 8 years old, because we are. There's like the 10 years before the eight started, though, that I was hustling, you know. And now we're like 30 W-2s, a couple contractors, multi-million dollar business. But we have built at the speed of cash.
Mm.
And it's an inspiring stat that we haven't taken on lines of credit or anything. But sometimes you feel that temptation because people are saying, oh, scale faster or, you know, you could. And I'm curious, like specifically for content creators and entrepreneurs that start having some success, one of the things that comes with that is lifestyle creep.
Mm-hmm.
And just this idea, how do you encourage, once that's happening, to just stay grounded, stay focused? And even what has been your approach to lifestyle creep in your own life? Clearly, you've been at many levels where it's been a kind of percentage. Your car, even if you're doing really well, should still be what?
Mm-hmm.
What percent of how much
all
you earn?
Of your vehicles? Should all be of your less vehicles than, less than 50% of your annual income. Yeah.
These principles, how do you think these help guide entrepreneurs that may be tempted to start letting their lifestyle creep bigger than even if they're very successful?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we suggest is, and I discovered this sitting with a young NFL guy. Same thing. Same. Space, because he had just signed a $10 million deal. And he's like, I don't need $10 million. I'm like, yeah, you're right, you don't. What do you need? And he goes, and next year I'm not going to get that. That was a signing bonus. I mean, it's just going to, the next year it's going to be like a million, you know, or whatever. Oh, darn. But yeah. And so, okay, let's set your life. What do you, let's sit down and do a budget. So we did a budget on him, and I don't even remember, but let's call it $200,000. Okay, he's going to live a really nice life on $200,000 a year. But you can make it 50. You can make it 100. I don't care what you make it. But set your, this operates my house in a way that's sustainable. I'm okay with this. It's not living on beans and rice. It's not never going out to eat. Those are things you do when you're getting out of debt. But this operates my house. 120 is 10,000 a month. Okay, whatever. So then everything over that, apply a percentage to it. And this, Sharon and I started doing that immediately after I met with this guy. I dreamed it up sitting with him. And we just take a percentage of everything above our basic operations and say, okay, how's that work out? Well, 40% is going to go to the government. So right before I walked down here, I opened my royalty check from the publisher, okay? I know where that check's going already. I don't have to go, oh, that's cool. It's already spent. It's going to go to percentages. 40% is going to go to the government. I'm an evangelical Christian, so I tithe. I give 10%. So 50% is gone before I start, okay? And then, so what am I going to do with the other 50%? I'm going to give some more, assign a percentage to that. I'm going to invest a percentage, hopefully a healthy percentage of that remaining 50, and I'm going to enjoy some more above basic operations. So I'm going to upgrade my lifestyle, and I'm going to intentionally scope up, have scope creep on my lifestyle. I'm going to intentionally scale up, but I'll intentionally scale down if that royalty check doesn't come to back down to whatever. And so in this guy's case, I'll use his percentages because I didn't tell you who he was. He said 5% more for lifestyle. It's 5% of 10 million. That's a lot. You know, you're okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
$500,000. So you can go buy a car, right?
Yeah.
And a nice car. And, and 35% into investing, that's 40 of the 50, and another 10 for giving in addition to his 10% to his church. And so he's generous with 10%, additionally generous with 20% total in the budget, pays his taxes, invests 35% of all his overage, which creates a sustainable situation, mm-hmm. create a perpetual motion machine here called a golden goose laying eggs principle in your investments. And he's going to enjoy some of it. And then I don't feel guilty with that. He doesn't feel guilty with that 5%. You can assign that and go, I can go buy that. And if my broke brother-in-law who votes wrong doesn't understand that I bought that and he's jealous, so what? I can deal with it. That's his problem. I know that I'm being wise when I purchase, when I take Sharon on this cruise, when I purchase a second home, when I buy a boat, whatever it is. But it's all in that lifestyle. It's a sign. Meanwhile, I'm investing. Meanwhile, I'm being generous more than I'm spending on myself, but I'm also enjoying the fruits of my labor.
I love that framework. And I have one final question, but I do want to link to any resources. I loved your book, Entree Leadership and the Summit, thanks. And I got to take our executive leaders there last year. But I know you're always publishing new resources, the personalities. So any just shout outs that we can share with our team that we'll put into the show notes.
Oh, it's all RamseySolutions.com. It's all there in the store. And Entree Leadership is there too. If you want to learn more about that, that product line is all for small business operators. It's more processes and it's a brand that's aimed directly at people running small business because that's my second love is small business people. I love them.
Well, grateful for it. And the impact you're making is incredible. And thank you for today.
Thank you.
You've said a lot, but looking back on your career, what is one piece of advice you'd give to content creators who aim to make a lasting impact in their niche?
Yeah. Play in such a way that you can keep playing. It's long ball. In your personal life, in your character, liquor's lady leverage, right? That's good. That, you know, play in such a way that you can keep playing. Figure out what it is that's going to take you out and stay away from the things that are going to take you out. Because if, you know, and find some way to be of service. If you're of service, your heart gets big and you can keep going. When it becomes very pointed back, it's just hard. It's not sustainable. It's not fun after a while. Eat enough lobster, it tastes like soap. You know, it's good, but enough of it? Yeah.
Dave Ramsey, thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. Honor to be with you. Look forward to Vegas. It's going to be fun.
Woo! Las Vegas, here we go.
Wow. So I got so many takeaways from that conversation with Dave Ramsey. And just a couple things. One, if you haven't got your ticket to growwithvideolive.com yet, Dave is one of our speakers. It's going to be an incredible event and really an environment that Dave has never been in before. Speaking to content creators, purpose-driven entrepreneurs, and small business owners that want to learn how to use video marketing. Of course, he talks about debt and all this other stuff, but he is the media OG. He's built this incredible media company, but started at a card table and had to build his way up with VHS tapes, eventually radio, and then eventually getting on YouTube. And as he said, all the platforms. And so one of the best things you can invest in right now, whether you're a business owner that wants leads and prospects, is video. Or whether you want to join the creator economy and you want to start and build a successful online brand leveraging video, this is the event to be at. All the details are at growwithvideolive.com. And also, if you want a copy of YouTube Secrets for free for a limited time at ytsecrets.com, we'd love to send you a copy of this book in the mail. Just cover shipping and handling, and we'd love to get this in your hands. If you watch the YouTube version of this podcast, I would love to hear your biggest takeaway in the comments. But if you're on audio or anywhere, it means the world to us here at Think Media. If you share this, if you like it, if you rate it, if you leave a review, wherever you consume the Think Media podcast, thanks again for being a part of this episode. My name is Sean Cannell, your guide to building a profitable YouTube channel, and I can't wait to connect with you in a future episode.